Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the story of your life. How would you like to be known? What is your legacy all about? And how can we create an end-of-life story that puts a dot at the end of the sentence, where you look back in retrospect and you say, I'm complete, I'm okay, I'm ready to go now? Many times we say we get our papers together, we kind of stick them in the drawer, and we don't really look at them again decades later. Sometimes we collect all of our pictures, we go through them, and we remember the grief, the sadness, or the pain that might come up with those pictures, yet we just hold our hand to our chest and say, you know what, all will be well. Do we really have closure over our family, our finances, or the way we have lived our life? Is it necessary? Do we need to go around and be able to say, I forgive you, I'm okay, let's have all this closure prior to leaving this life? Many questions we talk about today. It's about end of life, about legacy, about how you would like to be remembered in this world. Today my guest is Kimberly Best. Her book is How to Live Forever, a guide to writing the final chapter of your life story. Kim, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Kim, don't you think, you know, right now, people are saying, well, I have my papers together, I'm good to go. You know, I have this conversation every year around this time, and now this is May 2020, and it's time for hurricane season, you know. We collect all of our papers, where's our important stuff, you know. And I think the idea is that many people are saying, I really didn't think about papers. How important are they? So I think right from the beginning, Kim, let's talk about important papers. What are they? And why are they important? Let's hit on, you know, finances first. I mean, everybody needs to have their finances together. You know, you go into someone's home and after they pass away and it's like you have no clue what to do. You kind of just stand there, right?
Yeah, the ramifications for not having your legal things in order are huge for right. Not only the deceased person, but the family. So just a lot can go wrong for things that you've spent your whole life creating. So, and there's more. I meet a lot of people who say, well, I have a will.
Right.
But there's an extensive list of things that people have to have in order to go through your stuff and disperse of it how you wanted it to be. That goes everything from, you know, passwords to pet care to the legal papers as well.
Yeah, you know, my husband, he sells life insurance. And, you know, he'll go over one day and collect a payment from someone and he'll get a call the next day that they passed away and he'll go over the next day to be able to hand them their insurance booklet. And he says all of their stuff is out on the street already. You know, just 24 hours after they've passed away. You know, I think the idea is sometimes we like to know that our life is worth so much more. And I think that's truly what you're talking about in your book. Again, How to Live Forever. Is it to know that you want to leave a mark on this world? You really want to be able to feel as though you've had value in this life. Don't you think that's really what getting all of this information together is really about?
I think part of it is, yes, you're right, it is about value, but it's not the monetary value. So in a study by an insurance company, only 11% of people surveyed said that they wanted something willed to them. 77% said that they wanted wisdom and stories. So my purpose in, you know, I talk about having legal stuff in order. I talk about having your health care decisions in order. And that's so you can keep writing your story the way you want it to read. And those are just processes to finishing your life with as little regret as possible. And, you know, it's not a technicality, though it kind of is, but it is all part of writing your story. And at the end, whenever that is and whatever that looks like, to know that you you have things the way you want them, whether it is your legal papers or your healthcare decisions, and leaving behind your story, because that, as you said, has way more value than the things you leave behind. Yeah, that makes us immortal. I think our stories make us immortal.
Right. Because I think also, too, you know, I'm sure you've heard it. I mean, I've heard it over being in healthcare over five decades, too, myself, is that someone will pass away and they will say, oh, my gosh, they left me with this mess. Or, oh, my gosh, I don't even know where to start. Or, I don't know what someone wants. They didn't tell me, you know. Mm-hmm. I even look at it as we put all these papers together, too, like, you know, you say the financial and the health. And let's talk for a second, Kim, about the idea is that, great, everybody does it once in their life, but you have to revisit it because sometimes the messages or the information therein needs to be updated. Sometimes others that you leave things to or someone that will be doing your health care directive or someone who will be your health care proxy has passed before you. Don't you think the idea of updating your story and revisiting it is vital?
Revisiting it at least annually. And you're right. It's not just that you may lose people who you've named to be helpful, but your own perceptions of where you want your life to go and your own health situations and your potential outcomes. So more than what you say you want done with your health care, I think the most important thing, even more so than that, is that you understand fully what your conditions are, what your treatments are, the pros and cons of those, so you can make fluid decisions. And fluid meaning that you do update them as your situation changes. So, yeah, I don't ever want people to feel locked into something. I feel like in my own life, my biggest mistakes have been feeling locked in and not able to take a different path if I change my mind. This is all about being able to change your mind as another path becomes better for you.
Right. And also, to the idea of, you know, the DNRs. Let's look at those for a second. I had Dr. Sebastian Sepulveda on the show the other day, and he did a documentary movie about DNR, you know, when you get to that moment and all of a sudden your DNR, you say, you look at the patient and you say, are we sticking to the DNR or are we not? Wow, you know, sometimes I think we get scared and we say, I've put everything in place, and all of a sudden when you get to that moment, sometimes all of the best laid plans seem to go out the door. Have you found that in many cases too?
I think, I think there's a fine line between hope and regret. And that's a really difficult place for families to navigate. If a patient or a client has pretty clear expectations on their own quality of life. So I think those decisions around quality of life, where their bar is that they find life fulfilling and where they're willing to fight to live. And for everyone, that is different. But you know you're honoring that if that is clear. So so if your bar is being able to communicate with your family or being able to understand or watching TV or whatever it is that you're willing to endure discomfort of treatment in order to maintain a certain level, and where that is that, you know, my life is just about living now. There isn't a quality that I value and want to fight for it. When the family or friends or whoever has a clear recognition of that, I think it's almost it's hard because, you know, there's always the what ifs there, but knowing that they're honoring someone's wishes makes it so much more, you know, just heart able to accept kind of situation,
right?
Because they're doing with someone what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also, too, let's talk about the idea of memory, because that seems to be, you know, in these last several decades, really been something that's it's been a struggle for healthcare, financial, lawyers, physicians. It's been a struggle for everyone, patients and family members, because what is a tipping point when you can say that your memory, that you're no longer able to make those decisions? You know, we always tend to put off, you know, doing paperwork and having things together until we say, oh, over 65. You know, 65 used to be the big benchmark, you know. Everybody get your stuff in order at 65. But now it's kind of getting pushed off even later and later in life because we're living so much longer. Yet, you know, a lot of people are having memory issues in their 50s and 60s. And we say, who is really able to do this? And when is it time to start? I think the time to start is when you get married, when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, and every, you know, a few years consistently look at this. But sometimes I think people are afraid of that, don't you think?
Oh, that's so well said. That brought so many thoughts to mind. So I feel like our conversations around death and dying is our final frontier of the taboo things that we haven't talked about in the past. Like,
right
now we're able to talk about, you know, sex, religion, drugs. I mean, but we don't talk about death, and death is natural. And I think part of the fight, the resistance, especially around the healthcare decisions, is we have an expectation of surviving, right? So, so we, I feel like sometimes we think the healthcare system, and, you know, keeping in mind I'm a registered nurse, I worked in trauma and intensive care for my entire nursing career. We kind of feel like we should be able to drive up like we're, you know, automobiles, and they look under our hood and can fix anything. But we're also very different. It's not a perfect science. But more than that, I really do believe in my studying, especially for this book, that for living longer, everything has a price, right? So for living longer, the price we're paying for that is an extended dying process. And what I mean by that is we used to have things that were treating kill us. We would have a heart attack or a form of cancer, and now there's treatments for those. So as our system normally would break down and die because it is normal, we're now surviving those. So we have to really decide between surviving and life, and sort of have conversations around, again, the quality of life, because right now most conversations are around you must save this life. And life has value and is worth saving, absolutely. But at the point where it has value, that person, and that person is not in pain or tortured as a result of being alive. So we approach life like we want to live forever because we won't talk about the fact that we're mortal. And we send people to the doctor and to the hospital and we say, fix it, no matter their age or their stage in life. And oftentimes what we're doing is torturing them.
Right.
And the price for living longer, but losing our quality of life for just surviving longer, I sometimes say to people, you know, and not to sound cold, because I, you know, get the value of life and how hard it is to lose someone. But if you go to a nursing home and you see people who are alone and abandoned, but they're alive longer, you know, so we can't think, we have to change how we think of death as being you know, a punishment or a failure of the medical system or, you know, the result of eating too much bacon or whatever. It is a natural, it is natural. And I think when we can accept that it's part of life, we can embrace how we live better and we can live more fully. And it is for that that I think, you know, including death in our story and preparing for it only adds value to our life.
Right, because I think the biggest thing to recognize is that when we see a lot of these therapies and treatments, you know, on patients in elder years, we say, does the elder person really want this? And truly, it's 99% of the time, it's family, or mm-hmm. it's other extenuating circumstances, or mm-hmm. it's their paperwork, or whatever it might be that is keeping them there. Mm-hmm. You know, I had this one person and very close to me, and they just kept trying to drink themselves to the end. And mm-hmm. then when they were really close to it, they called for help, rescued out, and then they would spend, you know, 3 to 6 months trying to recover from that event. And this was a yearly process. Did this every single year for 20 years. And then eventually just couldn't do it anymore and then just left. And we say, sometimes are we setting ourselves up to be able to say, I'm afraid to meet God. I'm afraid to leave this world. I'm afraid. I think if we truly look at end of life, are we using savior mechanisms because of fear? Whatever it is, just fear.
I think fear, that's a great question. I think fear definitely plays a part in it. I mean, and fear plays a part in our, you know, every unknown that we have in life. So, you know, and we try really hard to avoid any change, and definitely death is a change. I think, you know, you can hold fear and hold an acceptance of the reality of this. I mean, if there's one thing we know people have done in the past, it is die. So it's a reality. But I think if we change the story we tell ourselves around fear, again, even by preparing, even by putting our best foot forward and making this as easy for ourselves and our families, you know, it channels fear into purpose, which is kind of the best use of fear, I think, is to channel it into purposefulness. Yeah,
I think also too, let's talk about the idea of nursing homes. You know, this 2020 global health event, you know, it really has hit elders, it's hit nursing homes, it has hit assisted living or rehab facilities. And I've been in nursing homes so many decades. I mean, I can remember back in the 70s, you know. And the idea is that when you go in there, we know it's not the best care sometimes. Now, we're not going to talk about the ones, there are fabulous ones out there. And there are ones that are great in the middle. But there's a lot of people who, just as you said before, are being put into these facilities and they are not having the best care that we would feel we would like our relatives to have. And I think the idea is that sometimes when global events show up like this, it kind of like brings to the forefront the inadequacies of some of our systems. You know, right now, healthcare is taking a brunt. It's saying, you know, are hospitals prepared? Are hospitals have this? Are they saviors and gods? When we go in, can we come out just as we always believed? When we put our elders into a place, is it safe? Is it clean? Are they going to care for them? All of these things right now are like explosive, don't you think?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful with who we give power to around the people that we love and ourselves. So I say this, being in the healthcare system, knowing nursing homes, I do believe that people are doing the absolute best they can. But that is still our family member, right? So I think we shouldn't give up total care. I think we should be willing to, you know, participate. Our society, or the Western society, mostly ours, is a little bit different in as much as, you know, we're like, okay, you're a certain age, somebody else take care of you. And it is hard. Yeah. I mean, I walked both my mom and my dad through their end of life. And my dad was in a just absolutely beautiful facility. It was brand new. It was just gorgeous. It looked like a 5-star hotel. And my dad had a horrible death. And I visited my father every single day, and still things happened.
Right.
And I mean, it was, you know, there is no perfect situation. And I think ultimately we should be responsible for that versus, you know, obviously the facility, somewhat of it. But I think another thing is our expectations. So mm-hmm. we want perfect care, but we want someone else to do it. Well, you know, that's tough. But but I think how we see our aging or dying people, and that is this, for us, the thing we value the most in life is our own autonomy, our independence, our ability to make decisions. But for elder people, we value their safety and we take away their autonomy. But if you pull them, they also value their autonomy. So here is what it comes to. And a book I recommend is Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. It's just phenomenal about the aging process and what I'm speaking to now. But it is this. So you're 85 years old and you want to stay at home and you want to do for yourself, but you're at a risk of falling. And everyone, you know, kind of takes away what you can do very often in order to keep you safe. But really what you want is to live fully all the way to the end, because you don't want to be bedridden with the rails up in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. You want to live your life as much as you can. And yes, the cost for that is you may fall, you will break a hip, there will be a decline. It's just like the what you mentioned as far as the global issues now. That mm-hmm. absolutely breaks my heart for people who are dying and in nursing homes who are already terminal, for hospice mm-hmm. people who are now alone in addition to the fact that they're already dying. Now, that's not to say there's not a population that is still not, you know, has a high quality of life and they shouldn't be at risk. But the ones that are already dying are now dying without their loved ones with them. And what an awful trade-off. I'm not pretending to know that I have the solution to that, but I would suggest that each family get to choose and decide not just, I don't want to be around grandma because she might catch the virus, when indeed grandma only has 2 weeks to live anyway. You know, it's to really not accept the blanket statements and look at each individual situation. Look at your own family. What would they want? What do you want? How do you want their end to look like? And how do you want to remember them? And how can you live with what decisions you made? So that is a mitigation for regret. Yeah, I know,
but
I
also
said a whole
too,
lot there.
right there when you said that, Kim, it just sparked something when you I forgot what you said.
About mitigating regret.
No, so Kim, right there when you said that, it was also how you'd like to remember them, and I think what's truly the biggest, I'll use the word, but I'm sure I'll change it. But I think it's the biggest curse of our life in this decade, is that we don't want to see how you get old. We don't want to see how disease and decay happens. We don't want to know when someone can't remember us anymore. And we do crave to only keep that picture in our mind of what we believe another person is. So the answer is, are we looking at the human part of the human cloak, you know, of our outside existence, in other words, this body we carry around as the person, or are we looking at the soul story inside of the person that is yet to be told or to be contained or to be danced with? And I think that vitally is such a spiritual moment, but truly it's what we're talking about because, you know, I mean, this in the year 2020, everybody's looking at their outside, you know, put a filter on it so you don't have any wrinkles. Make sure your face is perfect, you know, have everything cut off at your neck. And, you know, I mean, this idea that the world is a glorious place and you're perfection. And wow, once you start aging, all that goes out the window, right?
Yeah, as individuals and collectively as society. Yeah. And again, I think there's fear around that. You know,
maybe
I think
shame
always,
and guilt.
Yeah, you know, I think of life as a circle, sort of. And I will put this analogy. When my kids were little, I led them, right? And as they mm-hmm. became adults, I walked beside them. And then as you age, they walk in front of you and lead you. And that
right.
cycle just goes over and over again. And somewhere, Atul Gawande would suggest that with the explosion of antibiotics and vaccines and stuff, you know, we shifted our acceptance of that cycle and changed it to, well, you're not supposed to die. And
right.
and then, of course, with advancements and things like plastic surgery and stuff, you're not supposed to age either. So,
mm-hmm.
again, it goes to expectation, right? If we... if we stop and think about what we're doing, and you're right, see each person as a human and, you know, knowing that this will one day be us. Dr. Gallagher, I want to go back to something you said earlier about a time for wills and paperwork and stuff. You said you thought that when you get married is a good time to do that. I thought that was, you know, an excellent point to make. I want to say the it shouldn't happen to me thing that we have when we're teenagers, right? Like,
right.
We have this risk taking and it's like, it won't happen to me. Well, we carry that with us. I see, you're right, people are living longer, but it's actually starting to go the other way now. We're actually losing time in that. But there are also a lot more illnesses coming up, kinds of cancers and stuff, especially pancreatic cancer, childhood cancers. So I think the assumption that, oh, this won't happen until we get older, I feel like I've told a lot of stories in my book about people at different ages who have lost their lives and the stories of how the families went through those kind of things. But I think you're right. Like, we can't make the assumption that we have a tomorrow.
Right.
And I think that goes to living really as fully as we can now. When we let go of that assumption we're not supposed to die, that we live more fully now.
Yeah, I think the idea is that who has control? Well, we can give
right.
that up and say that there is no such thing as control, you know.
Right.
And it's sort of like, wait, you better wave that white flag. I mean, even if it's your diaper, do you know what I mean? It's like right from the get-go, you have no control. You're really just pretty much meandering within this limited society, you know, and whatever choices you make. And they say, oh, well, you have free will. No, you don't. You only have free will within the limitations. So I think the idea sometimes is that what can you do with that? And I live here in New Orleans, and it's all about celebrating life. Even, you know, at funeral times, it's celebrating life. Mm-hmm. Even at birth, it's celebrating life. You know, and I had gone into a local hospital, I think it was, a few years ago. And I heard some music come over. It was like a little lullaby, kind of like, I call it tinkle kind of music. And I asked the nurse, and I said, oh, that's cool. Why did they play that? They said, oh, someone was just born. And I was with a patient at the time, a client of mine, and she was at end of life. And I said, oh, so what do they do when someone passes away? And she says, what? How dare you? I says, no, can't we give them wings and play the same music? You know, and she went,
I love that.
You know, she was so indignant about it. And it's sort of, I think if we have to change our thoughts about death, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, it's inbred in me. I've always been this way. I always see things this way, you know, sort of, let's have a party. Someone's sick and in hospice, let's have a party, you know, or... my client, she says, I want a heart transplant. And the doctor from Paris happened to be here that day. We went down to see him, and he says, I can get your affairs in order. And she says, am I dying today? I said, not today. We drove all around the city, burned through like 10 oxygen tanks, and she told her stories. And then, you know, she was able to go to the hospital for her last few days. And then at 4 in the morning, they brought her home and had a huge party at her house for her last hour. You know, with balloons and candy and cake and everything, and it was just explosive, and it was full of life. But why do we wait till the end? Why do we wait till the end?
I love your story. I just love your story about making music after somebody dies.
Yeah.
A gentleman in his 80s emailed me, and then I talked to him on the phone, but... after he read my book, he said, I want to tell you the story of my wife. He said she had whatever problem she had. She had a feeding tube, and she was nearing the end of her life. And she realized that the feeding tube was prolonging her death. So she did exactly what you were talking about. She had a party. She called everyone she knew together to say goodbye. And she had a celebration of life.
Yeah.
And at the end of that evening – they pulled her feeding tube, and she died peacefully a couple of days, and she died how she wanted to die. Now, we can make those choices. You know, again, I think we defer our power to the medical system. Even with this this global situation now, you know, when I hear people say doctors have to decide who lives and dies, I want to scream because, you know, they only have to do that if we don't. So, and because it's hard, we're sometimes willing to defer those decisions to someone else, but at the same time, then we blame them, right? So, I think we can't put people in a situation where they can't win, especially the healthcare system, because I do believe they're doing the best they can. But I do also believe that that's up to you and me to take care of how we want our families to do, and to do that in the most informed way possible. What are the consequences? What does being on a ventilator look like? Because I've had friends say, oh, well, if I get really sick and they just put me on a ventilator, it's kind of like, you know, they make it sound like you just sit there on a ventilator and then you're great. And I'm like, you know, you're near death when that happens. Like, that is sustaining your life. Like, it is uncomfortable. It is that you probably are on medications by your IV, which is true, to keep you
You're almost in a comatose.
Keep your blood
patient.
Pressure up. I mean, you can't get any more proactive in life support. That is life support.
Right.
It's not
and
like,
you know
oh,
what?
I'm having problem breathing. They paralyze you. You are paralyzed. You're unconscious. They think you are, the best that the medicine can tell. But, you know, there's a PTSD afterwards people are talking about. I mean, it is hard. So the truth is, do we want to do this to people who are 80 years old? Not because of their age, so I don't mean to judge that by age, but who have other end-of-life issues, who are going to be going out peacefully. Do we want to die as peacefully as possible, or do we want to just prolong an inevitable? And I think that's a great place to ask the question, are we prolonging the inevitable and can we accept the reality? Can we celebrate the life as having so much value, the life that we can let go? I said today in another conversation that sometimes I think that saying goodbye is the bravest, most loving thing we can do, saying goodbye, just knowing when that time is to say goodbye.
You know, there was something that you hit on right there, Kim, and I have been saying it over and over, and it's falling. Sometimes people look at you and they're like, whoa, man, they go running the other way, is the word ventilator. People think ventilator is just, oh, it's just air, it's all good, it's oxygen. And, you know, and I talked about this with Dr. Sebastian the other day. We said, if they knew that the word ventilation equals life support, would they really be up in arms much different than they are now? And I truly believe that just by tweaking that word, it's like it has gotten people to say, oh, it's no big deal, you know? And it's sort of like the idea, and I said to him, I said, are we becoming desensitized to death or the process? Or other things, because, you know, let's look back on a few decades. When someone got cancer, it was really a big deal. You know, the community would come around them. Everybody would help them and everything. Now, it's like when someone has cancer, it's like they're walking around the grocery store and someone sees them and they said, oh, you have that port. I had that the other day, too. And they're like, it's got become too common. In other words, your pathway of your struggles, your pains, and what's coming up for your life has become so common that it doesn't give value sometimes to where you are by yourself. You know what I mean? You know that story that everybody in the world can be on a ventilator, but if I'm on a ventilator, it's my story. And be able to own your
that's
story.
A great point. Empathy you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think it gets to the point where so many people will say, oh, that's no big deal because they're using it in comparison, but everybody's story is different. And can we feel our story for ourselves, or are we constantly relating it to someone else's and giving it not much credence, you know?
That was so well said. That was just so well said. It brings up just so many things. One of them being the last thing you said about, are we comparing it to someone else?
Right.
You are right that we do that and we draw conclusions and they're not even similar sometimes. Well, X happened. And social media and all these things that now play into comparisons.
Yes.
You know, it's funny how that ties back into how we talk about death or look about death and dying, or whether or not someone should live or die, is holding a comparison to someone else. I think politically, I think religion-wise, I think in just about anything, if we honor the individual as living their best life as they can and stop drawing comparisons, we would be real way more effective. It would be a little more time-consuming on the front end, but reduce conflict on the back end a lot.
Yeah. Wait, do you have a few more minutes? Because we could talk a little
bit
more.
Okay. I know. I really, really, really like how you thought about some of these things. That they're just brilliant.
I've been in healthcare way too long, honey.
Oh, my gosh.
Way too long.
I was 19 and I'm 60. So,
yeah. Well,
I'm
65 and I can remember babysitting blue babies and I was 10 years old. So, come on. You know. But I have a lot of spiritual writings that I do. Experiential kind of stuff, and I've got a ton of those phrases. I just haven't put them all together in the book, where I see us as an eternal, and this human stuff that we carry around, I call it just, this is our wetsuit for this life, and you just unzip it, and there's this little sparkling stuff inside, and it's just, that's your soul energy. And when you're ready, you just unzip it, and you go to the next cosmos. That's how I tell my end-of-life clients. Just unzip that sucker. Let's let that go. And they're like, oh, cool, you know, because the weight of the human existence, we don't want them to have to feel they have to carry that. And a lot of them believe they have to carry that. They don't have to carry that.
One thing I love, a story that someone told me after they read the book, too, was that their mom had told her story, had left her story behind for her daughters. And at the very end of her written story, she said, you know, but my ending is not the end of my story. From my ending comes your beginning. And as far as our lives being our story, everything we do every single day, how we touch other people, how we interact, whether it's kindness or unkindness, it causes a ripple effect that continues. We do live on, even if our bodies are not here. And
right.
I think being incredibly purposeful in how we live and recognizing the finite nature of our bodies, then, you know, we can leave behind the parts of us that we want to leave behind, the acts that we want to leave behind, how we have changed the world, even if it's raising our kids or our jobs or, you know, how we treat a server at a restaurant. I mean, everything we do, I think, lives on in ways that we don't necessarily see. But to assume that none of it matters is just, I've heard people say it doesn't matter what I do. Ask the person you've interacted with if it mattered to them.
Yeah.
You know, it matters. Every moment matters.
Well, you know, I think it's really important, you know, in this last little bit of time we have together to talk today, Kim, is that if you look at the current situation and with the 2020 life events and how everybody is handling this life and health crisis, it's hitting every age group. It's hitting those who are healthy, those who are not. There, as I've written before on some of my posts, I said it's almost as if death has been a stealth little mist that comes in the night. It has no labels. It has no destination. It just shows up. And I think if we understand that, we say, wow, isn't now, just as we've started this conversation today, Kim, is about now. Maybe everybody should pull out their papers today and look at them. Maybe now we should start to be able to think about things in a little bit more of a constructive way about what would we like for end of life? How would we like to live our life today? And start being able to form that context instead of constantly running from it, because there's no place to go. If it comes as a stealthness in the night and it has no destination, how do you know when it shows up at your door? How do you know when you go into the hospital? We always used to think we come out. We go in to get fixed and we come out. Who's coming out all the time now? You know, I think so. The idea is this is definitely the best time ever to recognize that, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's exclamation points because you're right. Now it could be anyone for sure. I want to say, and I think this is really important. My book talks about how to have these conversations. So we can say have your paperwork, make these decisions, but still, how do you have these conversations when they're hard? How do you heal relationships, you know, so that if you do go, you don't have regret or unsaid things? And my book lays out that. But as a mediator, which I'm a mediator and a conflict manager, as a mediator, there are people who can sit down with families and groups and help people have these difficult conversations. And once we start having these conversations, it'll get easier. I speak to older groups, and we talk about how what we do now, we're teaching our children how to do. So I say we're pioneers. You all are pioneers. You're on the front end of how to show our children how to have these conversations, how to walk a final chapter at whatever age that is, you know, how to show up. And before we swept it under the rug and we didn't talk about it, but again, it's now time for us to do so. Now more than ever because of this, what's going on in the world right now. Yeah.
Right. You know, I can remember I had a client and she was so distraught. I mean, like, she just couldn't get over something and she was holding back. And I says, what is really bothering you? She said, well, you know, my partner, you know, we just bought this new house and we bought this new car and I'm really worried. And I says, is that why she's so angry? And she said, yes. And I said, well, so what is your worry? And she says, but I'm worried about it. I says, but you won't be here. You're going to do the best you can and let that worry go. And once she let that go, she said, I can't control from where I'm going the things that are here still on earth. You know, I think that is truly something that many, many people hold on till the last moment in time, is how they can control the outcome after they're gone. And no matter what piece of paper you have, no matter what stories you have told, know that you'll be free and that's not for you to be able to carry with you. So if you can get to that point in your conversations, you know, in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s and understand that, you start to say, you know what, I'm doing the best I can. You don't carry worry for many decades. Don't you think now that people are living much longer, they're having 3-4 decades of worry that they're just holding on to?
Yeah, if they haven't worked through that, that is definitely possible. What we actually have now is a new phenomenon with, you know, I also work with families and divorces, and a generation of people married 20, 30 plus years are now the highest rising divorce rates, which complicates the whole ending process with new families and remarriages and the need to learn how to communicate well. Yeah, around these things and then just about everything else. So, very, very interesting what you said.
Yeah, it's a tough place to be because you have no clue. And I think as we see more of these events going forward, we say, you know what, that's really showing us that we have no control. And once we understand we can have no control, we can have responsibility. You know, control is something we don't have, but responsibility to do our best we do have. And that's really what we talked about today, Kim, was about having responsibility for telling people what your wishes are for doing the best with your papers and your finances and your health care directives. And also to be able to tell your story to your loved ones and to be able to have closure every day, you know. We always teach our children, you know, when you go to sleep, you know, that if I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take, you know. And then when you get up in the morning, you put your feet down, you say, it's another great day. But we forget about that as we age. You know, we think that's, oh, that's only for kids. Really, it's for everyone, yes?
You know, it really is. I would like to leave you with something a very wise woman told me. And she said, you know, in life, she said it's in the Bible. I couldn't find it in the Bible, and maybe it's phrased different, but she said in life there are 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. The sorrows will find you. You must look for the joys. And I think, you know, as we age and at the end of life, it's a time of loss. There are definitely losses. This is not easy. I don't want to suggest it's easy, but we have to look for the joy. And
right.
And I think that's important.
Yeah. I think to just do the very best every day, it's really about living in the moment. You know, nothing is ever promised to us, but if we can live in the moment, we could say, wow, that was fantastic. And when you get those moments, hold on to them. You know, remember them. Kind of cement them into your thoughts, because you can always bring them up later when you might need them, right?
That's exactly right. Well said.
Kim, can you share with our listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much. BestConflictSolutions.com is my website. And the book is How to Live Forever, A Guide to Writing the Final Chapter of Your Life Story. And it's available at Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, as well as through Westbow, my publisher.
Very good. Well, Kim, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today. I think this conversation probably needs to be played almost every few months, so that others can say, wow, I missed it the first time, I wasn't tuned in, and now it seems to be at my door, right?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity. And it was a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, and you as well, Kim. Thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about How to Live Forever, A Guide to Writing the Final Chapter of Your Life Story by Kimberly Best, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page to go directly to her website for more information. And it is about living your best moments, because that's what's promised to us today, this present moment. Anything other than that is a gift. There are miracles all around us, and definitely our life can change in just a breath or 1 second of time. But do the best you can. Love those people around you and be able to say, you know what, these too shall pass if you're stuck in a place where you're not able to see the light. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.